thinking. Let's wait on that till tomorrow. We'll figure it out over pancakes. All right. Bosch disconnected. He started to even out, now that he had spoken to his daughter and his lawyer. There was a good short-term plan in place. He thought about Lucy Soto and whether he should reach out to her on his own and under the radar. They had only been partners for a brief period during his last year in the job for the LAPD, but unlike in his partnership with Edgar, they had gotten to the point of deep trust. He could blow through an intersection on her clear without hesitation, any day. His gut told him that hadn't changed. Chapter 31 Maddie came charging out of her room as soon as she heard the front door close. She grabbed Bosch in a desperate embrace that made him feel like he was on top and at the bottom of the world at the same time. "Everything's all right," he said. He held her head against his heart. Then he let her go. She stepped back and appraised him while he did the same to her. He could see dried tracks from tears on her face. She also somehow seemed more grown up since the last time he had seen her. Bosch didn't know if that had come in the past 24 hours, or was just the natural course of things. It had been a month since they had been together, and she looked taller and thinner, and had changed her sandy blonde hair into a shorter layered cut. There was something professional about it.
"OMG, what are you wearing?" she exclaimed.
Bosch looked down at himself. The jail pants and paper slippers were indeed shocking. Yeah, well, it's a long story," he said. "They had to take my clothes for evidence, and this is all they had."
"Why would your clothes be evidence?" she asked.
"Well, that's the part that's a long story. What are you doing about dinner? You staying up here, or do you have to go back? I know you've got your trip to IB, right?"
"We're not leaving till tomorrow, but it's my Sunday to cook."
Bosch knew that his daughter and her three roommates had a Sunday evening tradition of rotating cooking duties, the only night of the week they had promised to always eat together. Maddie was up and couldn't let the others down.
"But I want to hear the story, Dad," she said. "I've been waiting here all day and deserve to hear it."
Bosch nodded. She was right. "Okay, give me 5 minutes to change into my own stuff," he said. "I don't like looking like a prisoner." He headed down the hall to his room, calling back to her a request that she water the plants. Throughout her high school years, she had insisted on buying several potted plants for the back deck. She had dutifully maintained them with a watering cycle, but then went off to college, and Bosch was left holding the responsibility, which proved difficult for a man with his schedule.
"Already did," she called back down the hall to him.
"I was so nervous I did it twice."
"Good," he called down the hall. "I won't have to worry about it for a week."
It felt good to get out of the jail pants and slippers. As he did so, the envelope that had been mailed to him at the police station fell to the floor. Bosch put it on the bed table to open and read later. Before putting on his own clothes, he slipped into the bathroom and shaved 5 days of stubble off his face. He pulled on blue jeans, a white button-down shirt, and a pair of black running shoes. On his way back up the hall, he stopped in the kitchen to put the jail pants and slippers in the trash can under the sink. He then went to the refrigerator for a beer, but there was none, and his leaning down to look into the far recesses of the box didn't change that. He straightened up and looked at the bottle of bourbon on top of the refrigerator. He decided against it, even though he could have used something to help chill things out. Seeing the bottle, however, made him think that he should give what remained of the precious brand to Edgar to thank him for his warning about the plane ride over the Salton Sea.
"Dad?"
"Yeah, sorry." He went out to the living room to tell the story. There was no one in the world Bosch trusted more than his daughter. He told her everything, more detail than he had even told the collective in the mobile command post. He felt the details would mean more to her, and at the same time, he knew he was telling her about the dark side of the world. It was a place she had to know about, he believed, no matter where she went with her life. He ended the story with an apology. "Sorry," he said. "Maybe you didn't need to know all of that."
"No, I did," she said. "I can't believe you volunteered for it. You were so lucky. What if you'd gotten killed by those guys? I would have been all alone."
"I'm sorry. I guess I figured you'd be all right. You're strong. You're on your own now. I know you have roommates, but you're independent. I thought..."
Thanks a lot, Dad. Look, I'm sorry, but I wanted to catch these guys. What that kid did, the son, it was noble. When this all comes out, people will probably say he was stupid and naive and didn't know what he was doing. But they won't know the truth. He was being noble. And there isn't a lot of that out there in the world anymore. People lie, the president lies, corporations lie and cheat. The world is ugly. And not many people are willing to stand up to it anymore. I didn't want what this kid did to go by without. I didn't want them to get away with it, I guess. I understand. Just think of me next time, okay? You're all I have. Right. I will. You're all I have, too. So now tell me the other story about what's in the paper today. She held up the business card from David Ramsey she had found left at the front door. It reminded Bosch that he had not read the full-time story. He now told her about the Danielle Schuyler case and the move by Preston Borders to get off death row and frame Bosch for planting evidence in the process. This story ran right up until she felt pressed for time, having to drive all the way back to Orange County. She had already decided to pick up dinner on the way instead of cooking it late. She gave Bosch another long embrace, and he walked her out to her car. "Dad, I want to come up for the hearing on Wednesday," she said. Normally, Bosch didn't like her to go to hearings on his cases, but this one would be different because it would feel like he was on trial. He could use all the moral support he could get. "What about Imperial Beach?" he asked. "I'll just come back early," she said. "I'll take the train up." She pulled her phone out of her back pocket and opened an app. "What are you doing?" "It's the Metrolink app. You keep saying you're going to take the train down to see me. You got to get the app. There's a 6:30 I could take up. Gets to Union Station at 8:20. "You sure?" "Yeah, it says right..." "No, I mean about you coming up." "Of course. I want to be there for you." Bosch hugged her again. "Okay, I'll text you the details. I don't think court starts till about 10. Maybe we do breakfast before, unless I have to meet with your uncle."
"Okay, whatever."
"What are you going to pick up for dinner?" "I want to get Zanku and bring it down, but then my car will smell like garlic for about a month. That might be worth it." Zanku Chicken was a local chain of Armenian fast food restaurants that had been a favorite takeout source for them over the years.
"Bye, Dad."
He stayed on the curb until he watched her car make the turn and disappear down the hill. Back in the house, he looked at the business card she'd left on the table and thought about calling Ramsey to set him straight. He decided against it. Ramsey wasn't his opponent, and it would be better not to use the newspaper to let his real opponents know what was coming. The Times reporter would undoubtedly be in court Wednesday and would get the full story then. Bosch just had to nut it out for 3 days under the shadow the newspaper story had shrouded his life in. Bosch opened his phone, and after doing some research online to get the number, called the Van Nuys jail and asked for the control officer. He identified himself and said he wanted to set up an interview with a custody on the female tier. "Can it wait?" the officer asked. "It's Sunday night and I don't have people to sit on an interview room." "It's a double homicide," Bosch said. "I need to talk to her." "Okay, what's the name?" "Elizabeth Clayburg." Bosch heard him type it into his computer. "Nope," the officer said. "We don't have her." "Sorry, I meant Clayton," Bosch said. "Elizabeth Clayton." More typing. "We don't have her either," the officer said. "She ROR'd a couple hours ago." Bosch knew that meant she was released on her own recognizance. "Wait a minute," he said. "You let her go?" "No choice," the officer said. "Capacity protocol, nonviolent offense." Countywide, the jail system was overcrowded, and nonviolent offenders were regularly released early from minor sentences or released without having to post bail. Elizabeth Clayton had apparently fallen into the latter category and was released after 1 day and before she could be placed in a drug rehabilitation unit. "Wait a minute, wasn't she in detox?" Bosch asked. "You released early from detox now?" "I don't have her on the box as having been in detox," the officer said. "They have a waiting list in detox anyway. Sorry, detective." Bosch held his frustration in check and was about to thank the officer and hang up. Then he thought about something else. "Can you put another name in, just to see if you have him?" "Give it to me." "Male, white, Last name Brody. I don't have a first handy. Well, that might be it. Nope, I found him. James Brody, also arrested Saturday, same charge, prescription fraud. Yeah, he got kicked too. Same time as Clayton? Nope, earlier, by a couple hours. Most violent offenders are male, and that's who we need to make room for. So the male NVs get out sooner than the ladies. Bosch thanked the officer and disconnected. 5 minutes later, he was in his Jeep, following the winding road down to the 101. He took the freeway north, back into the valley, and over to Van Nuys. He made a call on the way to Cisco, attempting to make arrangements for Elizabeth Clayton if he could find her. The jail from which Clayton and Brody had been released was located on the top floor of the LAPD's Valley Bureau headquarters, which anchored a mini-civic center where local courthouses, a library, and Satellite City Hall and federal buildings were located at the edges of a public plaza. Bosch parked on Van Nuys Boulevard at the western end of the plaza and started walking toward the Valley Bureau at the far end of the concrete and tree-lined concourse. It was a Sunday evening and the plaza was largely deserted, except for the homeless strays who inhabited every parcel of public property in the city. Bosch could not remember the last time he had been in the plaza, but thought it had been at least a couple of years. The bushes and shade trees around the contours of the buildings had all been cut back. Many had been replaced with palm trees that offered no cover. He knew this was a disguised effort to keep to a minimum the homeless population who were living in the plaza. He checked every corner he passed and every homeless face that looked at him. He did not see Clayton or Brody. The library, usually a bastion for those with nowhere to go, was closed. Bosch covered one side of the plaza until he got to the Valley Bureau building, and then turned back and went down the other side. His search turned up nothing, and he returned to his car. Sitting behind the wheel, he thought about things, and then called the number Jerry Edgar had given him when Bosch and Lourdes had visited his office. Edgar answered, and it sounded like he had been asleep. "Jerry, it's Harry. You up?" "Just taking a nap." "I bet you took a long one." "Yeah, sort of, but I have a question."
"Shoot."
"The woman you and Hovan arrested at the pharmacy yesterday with the others?"
"Yeah, with the shaved head."
"Exactly. I wanted to talk to her. Bella said she got booked into Van Nuys. I just went there and they kicked her loose a couple hours ago."
"Like I told you, Harry, this is not a high-priority crime. I don't know what it will take. Maybe if 1 million people die from this, people will wake up and pay attention."
"Right, I know. I got a question. Where would she go?" "She's put out in the street in Van Nuys, needs a hit pretty bad by now, and she's on foot."
"Shit, man, I have no idea where she..."
"Did you book her?"
"Yeah, I did. Me and Hovan booked them all."
"Did you go through her stuff?" "What did she have?"
"She had a fake ID, Harry. There was nothing there."
"Right. Right, I forgot. Shit." There was a pause before Edgar finally spoke.
"What do you need her for?"
"She's a lifer, man. I could tell." "It's not like that. One of the guys you busted her with, Brody, he was kicked too."
"He's the guy you wanted out of the picture."
"Yeah, because he had it in for me and for her. Now today I find out he got released a couple hours ahead of her from the same jail. If she runs into him on the street, he's going to either hurt her because of me, or find a way to use her to get his next hit. Either way, I can't let that happen." Bosch knew that it was not unusual in the drug underworld for a male user to connect with a female in an alliance where one could provide protection while the other procured drugs through sexual barter. Sometimes the alliance was involuntary on the woman's part.
"Fuck, Harry. I don't know," Edgar said. "Where are you?"
"The Van Nuys jail," Bosch said. "I looked around. She's not here." There was a longer pause this time before Edgar broke the silence.
"Harry, what's going on? I mean, it's been a while. But I remember Eleanor."
Bosch's ex-wife and the mother of his daughter, now deceased. Bosch had forgotten that he and Edgar were partners when he met her, and later when he married her. Edgar had picked up on the resemblance in Elizabeth Clayton.
"Look, it's not that," Bosch said. "She did me a solid when I was under. I owe her. And now she's out here somewhere on the street, and that guy Brody is too."
Edgar said nothing, his silence making it clear he was not convinced.
"I gotta go," Bosch said. If you think of something, call me back, partner. Bosch disconnected.
Chapter 32. Bosch started driving north on Van Nuys Boulevard, looking at every pedestrian and in every recess behind the facade of every store and business. He knew it was a needle in a haystack proposition, but he had no other ideas. He considered calling the Van Nuys Division watch office to ask the lieutenant to put a flag out to all patrol units, but he knew that on a Sunday evening the number of cars on the street would be low, and the request from the SFPD would not be treated with any kind of enthusiasm. It could also blow back on him, with Chief Valdez asking the same sort of questions Edgar had asked. So he continued the solo search, turning around at Roscoe and making his way south. He was 20 minutes into it when he got a call back from Edgar. Harry, you still up there looking for? Yeah, you got something? Look, man, I'm sorry about my assumptions from before, okay? I'm sure you have good reason to... Jerry, you have something for me, or are you just calling to shoot the breeze? Because I don't... I have something, okay? I have something. Then give it to me. Bosch pulled to the curb to listen and possibly take notes. We have something at the office. We call the Hot 100, Edgar said. These are doctors who are on our radar as likely being involved with cappers and shady scriptwriting. Doctors we're building cases on. Was Ephraim Herrera on there? Not yet, because I hadn't taken up that complaint. Remember? Right. Anyway, I just called one of my colleagues and asked about Van Nuys. She told me there's a Hot 100 guy up there who runs a clinic on Sherman Way. It's supposedly 7 days a week, and some of the intel on him is that if you're a woman and need a script, he is more than likely going to offer a discount for special favors, if you know what I mean. This doctor is in his 70s, but what's the name of the clinic? Sherman Health and Med at Sherman Way in Kester. The doctor's name is Ali Rohan. People call him Chemical Ali because he comes through with the meds, the chems. And he's one-stop shopping, known to prescribe and fill. If your girl is plugged into the scene up there at all, she'd know about him. She's not my girl, but I appreciate it, Jerry. I was joking, man. Jesus. Still hard-ass Harry after all these years. That's right. This guy Chemical Ali, how come he wasn't shut down with all that you're saying? Like I told you before, Harry, these things are tough. Medical bureaucracy, Sacramento bureaucracy. We'll shut him down eventually. Okay, thanks for your help. Anything else comes to mind, hit me back. Bosch disconnected and pulled away from the curb. He made a U-turn and took Van Nuys back up to Sherman Way, where he turned west. He drove through the intersection at Kester without seeing the clinic. He continued a few blocks and then turned around. On the second go-by, he saw the clinic in the inside corner of a small shopping plaza. A liquor store and a pizza shop were open as well, and the parking lot was half-filled with cars. Bosch pulled down the sun visor to give him a bit of a visual blind and pulled in. He cruised through the lot, keeping an eye on the clinic. There was a pass-through to either a rear alley or another parking lot. The clinic's entrance was in this passage, which gave it visual protection. At a quick glance, he saw people milling about outside the door to the clinic, but he could not identify anyone. He turned out of the lot and went down a block before finding an alley that would take him to the rear of the shopping plaza. He cruised by and saw a line of head-in parking spaces behind the plaza's stores. Parked first in line by the pass-through was a Mercedes-Benz coupe with a vanity plate that said Dr. Ali. As he went by, he got a better look at the people congregating by the clinic door. Three men, none of whom Bosch recognized, other than that they had the haggard and desperate look of addicts. He almost smiled when he saw one of them was wearing a knee brace similar to the one he had employed. At Sherman Way, he turned right and entered the front lot of the plaza again. He went down the first lane and took a parking place that would allow him to see into the pass-through. The clients were mostly just in silhouette, but he was confident that he would be able to identify a female figure if a woman left the clinic. Bosch pulled his phone, Googled the name of the clinic, and got a phone number. He called and asked the woman, who answered how long the clinic would be open. "We are closing soon," she said. "The doctor must leave at 8. Bosch thanked her and disconnected. He checked his wrist and realized he had forgotten to put his watch back on after coming in from undercover.
He looked at the dash and saw he had 20 minutes until closing time. He settled in and kept his eyes on the clinic's entrance. 10 minutes into the surveillance, Bosch's attention was drawn to his right, to the pizza shop. It appeared to be largely a takeout and delivery operation, but two tables were set up on the sidewalk out front. Bosch noticed a man wearing an apron, leaning through the front door, gesturing and talking to a man sitting by himself at one of the tables. The seated man was partially hidden from Bosch's view by a row of potted plants. He would not have even noticed him if the man with the apron had not come to the door. It looked to Bosch like the apron man was telling the other man to leave. He was pointing toward the parking lot. Bosch lowered his window so he might be able to hear the confrontation, but it ended abruptly with the man behind the plant standing up and cursing the pizza man. He then walked out from the seating area and headed down the line of shops towards Sherman Way. Bosch immediately recognized him. It was Brody. All at once, Bosch felt a charge and a sense of dread. He thought he understood things. Brody knew about Chemical Ali, but had no money upon his release from jail, and nothing to offer. Brody had followed Elizabeth Clayton from the jail, and was watching and waiting for her to emerge with pills in her possession, so he could take them, and then exact his misguided revenge. He knew the situation could also be that Clayton and Brody had come to the clinic together, and he was simply waiting for her to come out. But from what Bosch knew of her leave-me-alone personality, he didn't see her as a team player. Bosch got out of the Jeep, quickly went to the back, and raised the tailgate. Because he was not assigned a vehicle at SFPD, he carried his work kit in the back of his own car. This was a duffel bag filled with personal equipment he might need in any circumstance that might come up during an investigation. He looked back over his shoulder and caught sight of Brody making it to the end of the plaza and turning the corner heading west. Bosch knew that would take him to the back alley and possibly down to the pass-through where Clayton would emerge if she was in the clinic. Bosch quickly unzipped the go bag and rummaged through it. He found a Dodgers baseball hat and, putting it on, pulled the brim down over his forehead. Then he found the plastic zip ties and took two. He coiled them so they would fit in the back pocket of his jeans. He zipped the bag closed and dropped the tailgate. He was ready. After checking the corner of the plaza for any sign of Clayton, Bosch headed to the end of the plaza where he had last seen Brody. He quickly covered the distance and turned onto the sidewalk fronting Sherman Way. There was no sign of Brody, and that confirmed for Bosch that he had slipped down the alley behind the plaza. He moved quickly to the alley entrance and made the turn as well. Again, there was no sign of the man. The alley was much darker than when Bosch had driven through earlier. The dimming light of dusk was reduced to shadow because of the structures on either side of the alley. Bosch proceeded cautiously, trying to hold to the shadows himself as he moved along. "Where's your cane now, shitbird?" Bosch turned at the sound of the voice in time to see Brody stepping out from between two dumpsters and swinging a broomstick. Bosch was able to cock his left arm like a chicken wing, raise it, and take the main force of the blow across the forearm. The impact sent a jolt of pain shooting up Bosch's arm, but it only served to sharpen his response. Rather than step back, Bosch stepped into Brody, whose momentum was carrying him forward. He brought his knee up hard into Brody's crotch and heard the air blast out of him. The broomstick clattered to the asphalt, and Brody doubled over. Bosch grabbed the back of his shirt, pulled it up over his head and shoulders, and swung him around 180 degrees, before releasing him head first into the side of one of the dumpsters. Brody hit and went down with a groan. Bosch moved in. Because Brody's arms and wrists were tangled in the shirt, Bosch went to his ankles. "Nice move," Bosch said, "warning me like that. Smart." Bosch pulled the zip ties out of his back pocket and secured Brody's ankles tightly, using both plastic strips to double down on the bindings. Of course, Brody could easily work his hands free of the shirt, Bosch knew, but then he would be faced with the dilemma of how to free his feet. He would have to pogo out of the alley and find someone willing to cut him loose. It would slow him down long enough for Bosch to do what he needed to do. The quickest way to the clinic was to continue down the alley. As Bosch went along, he noticed two figures moving away in the darkness from the pass-through. It was too dark for him to determine their gender, so he picked up his pace to a trot, and soon he got close enough to see they were men. Bosch moved by the Mercedes, cut into the pass-through, and went to the clinic door. It was locked. He rapped hard on the glass with his fist. He noticed an intercom box mounted on the door's frame and pushed the button 3 times. A few moments later, a woman's voice sounded from the box. Bosch recognized it from the call he had made to the clinic earlier.
"We're closed, I'm sorry."
Bosch pushed the button to respond. "Police, open the door." There was no response. Then a man's voice with a Middle Eastern accent came from the box.
"Do you have a warrant?"
"I just want to talk, doctor. Open up."
"Not without a warrant. You need a warrant."
"Okay, doc. Then what I'm going to do is wait for you at your Mercedes in the alley. I've got all night." Bosch waited. 10 seconds went by while the doctor apparently considered his options. The door was then opened by a woman wearing nursing scrubs. Behind her stood a man with white hair, who Bosch assumed was Dr. Rohat. The woman pushed her way through the door and passed Bosch.
"Wait a minute," he said.
"I'm going home," the woman said. She kept going toward the alley.
"We are closed," the man said. "Her work is done today."
Bosch looked at him. "You're Chemical Ali?"
"What?"
the man exclaimed indignantly.
"I am Dr. Rohat."
He gestured toward a wall behind a reception counter, where there were several framed diplomas with writing too small to read. Bosch couldn't be 100% sure that Clayton was in the clinic. Brody could have been waiting and watching for any frail-looking patient to rip off. But the intel from Edgar about Rohat's proclivities made him feel like he was on firm ground. "Elizabeth Clayton, where is she?" Bosch asked. Rohat shook his head.
"I do not know that name," he said.
"Sure you do," Bosch said. "Is she in there?"
"There is no one here. We are closed."
"Bullshit. You would have walked out with the nurse if you were done here. Do I have to go through this whole place? Where is she?"
"They're closed."
The sound of something clattering to the floor came behind the closed door behind the reception counter. Bosch immediately pushed by Rohat and headed toward the door, assuming it led to the rear offices and exam rooms.
"All right," Rohat exclaimed. "I have a patient in room 3. She's resting and should not be disturbed. She's sick."
Bosch didn't break stride. He went through the door, Rohat calling after him.
"Wait, you can't go in there."
There were no markings on any of the doors that lined the rear hallway. Bosch went to the 3rd door on the left and flung it open. It was a storage room that looked like it was managed by a hoarder. There was junk piled upon junk. Bicycles, TVs, computer equipment. Bosch assumed these were things Rohat took in trade for prescriptions and drugs. He left the door open and went across the hall to the door directly opposite. Elizabeth Clayton was in the room. She was sitting on an examination table, a paper drape sheet wrapped around her shoulders and covering most of her body, her bare legs dangling off the table. On the floor was the source of the sound Bosch had heard, a stainless steel cup lying in a pool of spilled water. Clayton was naked beneath the drape sheet, and one of her breasts was exposed, though she seemed unaware of it. The skin of her breasts was a shocking white against her chest and neck, which had been burned dark brown by so many days spent in the desert sun. Her hair was bedraggled, and she was in a daze. She did not even look up as Bosch entered. She was staring at the tattoo of the stars on her hand. "Elizabeth!" She slowly raised her chin as Bosch came to her. She dropped her hand into her lap, and her eyes held on his. He saw recognition in them, but no understanding of where she knew him from. "I'm going to take care of you. How much did he give you?" He started to pull the sheet around her to cover her nakedness. Her body was emaciated, and he wanted to look away, but didn't. She held one of her hands between her legs, not in a show of modesty, but what in Bosch interpreted was a meager protective gesture. "I'm not going to hurt you," he said. "You remember me? I'm here to help." He got no response. "Can you get up? Can you get dressed?" Rohat came into the room behind him.
"You're not allowed in here. She is a patient, and what do you..."
"What did you give her?" Bosch turned on him.
"I don't discuss patient care with..."
Bosch lunged at him and drove him backward into the wall. Ali's head banged against a print showing the vital organs of the human body. Bosch gripped the lapels of his white lab coat and pushed hard against him. "You're not a doctor. You're a monster. And I don't care how old you are. I will beat you to death in this room if you don't answer my questions." How much did you give her?
Bosch could see real fear in Rohat's eyes now.
I prescribed 2 80-milligram oxycodone pills for pain. It is time release and not to be taken separately. But when I was not in the room, she crushed and snorted them both. This tripped her into an overdose. It is not my fault.
Bullshit, not your fault. How long ago?
2 hours. I am treating her with naloxone, and she'll be fine, as you can see by her sitting up.
And what'd you do to her while she was out? You fucker, you piece of shit.
I did not.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that when I take her to the rape center.
We had sex before, yes. She agreed. It was completely consensual.
Fuck you, consensual. You're going to jail. Basha's anger overcame him, and he swung Rohat away from the wall so that when he punched him, he'd have the satisfaction of seeing Rohat's head snap back before he dropped like a wet blanket. Bosch pulled his left arm back to deliver the blow. But before he brought his fist forward, there was a loud beep from the intercom box on the wall next to the door. Bosch hesitated. That gave Rohat time to bring his hands up to block or at least slow down the coming impact. Please, the doctor begged.
Hey, I know you, Elizabeth said.
Bosch dropped his left hand and used his right to shove Rohat toward the intercom. Tell them to get lost. Rohat pushed the intercom button.
We are closed, sorry.
He looked back at Bosch for approval. Then a voice Bosch recognized came through the intercom. Jerry Edgar, Medical Board of California. Open up. Bosch nodded. His old partner had come through. Go let him in, he said. Chapter 33 Edgar came into the examination room as Bosch was helping Elizabeth get dressed.
Harry, I saw your car out there. I thought maybe you needed help.
I do, partner. Help me get her dressed. I have to get her out of here.
We should call an ambulance or something. This is crazy.
Just hold her up. She's coming out of it. Bosch was trying to pull her blue jeans up her rail-thin legs. He coaxed her up into a standing position, and then Edgar held her steady as Bosch brought the pants up over the bony points of her hips.
I want to leave, she said.
That's exactly what we're doing, Elizabeth, Bosch said.
He's a mean motherfucker, she said.
Bosch was about to agree and looked around the room. Hey, where's Rohat? Edgar did the same quick survey. Rohat wasn't in the room.
I've got her, go check.
Edgar left the room. Bosch turned to Elizabeth, so her back was to him. He quickly reached down to the pale yellow jacket that was in the pile of her clothes on the floor. He held it around in front of her. Can you put this on? We'll take the rest of your clothes with us. She took the jacket and slowly started to put one of her arms into a sleeve. Bosch gently pulled the paper sheet off her shoulders and dropped it to the floor. He saw the full RIP tattoo on the back of her shoulder. Daisy, 1994-2009. A 15-year-old girl, Bosch thought. That gave him a clue and an understanding that made him all the more resolved to stay on this path with Elizabeth. Operating mechanically, Elizabeth managed to pull the jacket on, but fumbled with a zipper. Bosch turned her around and zipped it up. He then gently pushed her back onto the exam table so he could put on her socks and shoes. Edgar returned from his search for Rohat.
He's gone. He must have slipped out after he let me in.
He looked relieved, and Bosch realized it had nothing to do with Rohat. It was because Elizabeth was now fully dressed. Probably because I told him he was going to jail. Doesn't matter. We can hook him up later. Let's get her out of here.
To where? No shelter's gonna take her in this condition.
We have to go to a hospital, Harry.
No hospital. And I'm not talking about a shelter. Hold her steady.
You can't be serious, Harry. You're not taking her home.
I'm not taking her home. Let's get her to the door and then I'll pull my car up.
It took almost 10 minutes to move Elizabeth through the clinic and out the exit to the passage connecting the front and back of the plaza. This way, Bosch said. He led her toward the front parking area. Once there, he left her leaning against Edgar and ran across the asphalt to his jeep. He scanned his surroundings as he went and saw no sign of Brody. Bosch brought the jeep up to Edgar and Elizabeth and then hopped out to help her get into the front passenger seat and secured her with a seatbelt.
Harry, where are you going?
A treatment center.
Which one?
It doesn't have a name.
Harry, what the fuck?
Jerry, you gotta trust me. I'm doing what's best for her, and it doesn't have anything to do with what the rules are. I am past all of that, okay? What you need to worry about is how to secure these premises now that Chemical Ali is on the run. There are probably enough pills in that clinic to create an army of zombies like her. Bosch stepped back, closed the door to the Jeep, and moved around to the driver's side. And that army's gonna be here by sunup. As Bosch slipped into the Jeep, he saw Edgar glance back at the entrance to the unlocked clinic. Once inside the car, he checked Elizabeth, and saw that she was leaning her head against the window of the passenger side door, and already nodding off. Bosch pulled away and headed for the parking lot exit. He checked Edgar in the rear view. His former partner was just standing there, watching Bosch drive away. The good news was they didn't have to go far. He got back over to Van Nuys Boulevard and took it north to Roscoe. He turned west at that point and took Roscoe under the 405 freeway and into an industrial neighborhood, dominated by the size and smell of the giant Anheuser-Busch brewery, its stacks billowing beer smoke into the night. Bosch made two wrong turns in the neighborhood before finally finding the place he was looking for. The entrance gate in the metal and barbed wire fence that surrounded the property was open. There was no sign on the building, not even an address, but the row of six Harleys parked out front was the dead giveaway. Bosch parked as close as he could to the black door at the center of the structure's facade. He got out and went around to help Elizabeth. He put his arm across her back and half held her up as they approached the door. "Come on, Elizabeth. Help me here. Walk. You gotta walk." The door opened before they got to it. Cisco stood there. "How is she?" he asked. "She was able to get a heavy hit before I could find her," Bosch said. "She OD'd and then was given Narcan and is coming out of it. Are you ready for her?" "We're ready. Let me take her." Cisco bent down and simply picked Elizabeth up and carried her inside. Bosch followed, and once past the threshold, saw what was not revealed on the outside. A clubhouse. There were two pool tables in a large room, as well as an unmanned bar, couches, tables, and chairs. Neon signs depicted skulls and motorcycle wheels with halos, the symbols of the road saints. A couple of large men with long beards watched Cisco and company parade through. Bosch followed Cisco down a dimly lit hallway and into a small room that was equally dim and contained only an army cot like the one Bosch had spent the past two nights on in the migrant bus in the desert. Cisco put Elizabeth down gently on the cot and then took a step back and looked at her skeptically. "You sure you shouldn't have taken her to the hospital?" he asked. "We can't have her croak in here. If she does, she disappears. They aren't going to call in the coroner, you know what I mean?" "I know," Bosch said. "She's coming out of it. I think she'll be okay. The doctor said so." "The quack doctor, you mean? He wouldn't have wanted her dying in his place either." "How much did she take?"
"She crushed 280s.
Cisco whistled.
"Sounds like maybe she kind of wanted to end things, you know?"
"Maybe. Maybe not."
"So this is where you did it?"
"This room?"
"Different room. Same place. I was nailed in. This one's got locks on the outside of the door."
"And she's safe here?"
"I guarantee it."
"Okay, I'm going to leave and come back in the morning. Early. I'll talk to her then."
"And you're all set?"
"We're set. I'll wait on the Suboxone until you come back and she can decide.
Remember, she's got to make the call or we're done here."
"I know. Just keep an eye on her and I'll be back."
"Will do.
And thanks."
"Pay it forward.
Isn't that what they say?"
"This is me paying it forward."
"That's good."
Bosch stepped close to the cot and bent over to look down at Elizabeth. She was already asleep, but seemed to be breathing normally. He then straightened up and turned toward the door.
"Need me to bring anything when I come back?" he asked.
"Nope," Cisco said.
"Unless you want to bring me back my cane and knee brace, if you're done with them."
Yeah, that might be a problem. Both were seized as evidence in the case."
"Evidence of what?"
"That's a long story, but I may have to replace those for you."
"Forget it.
In a way, they were a temptation. Good to be rid of them, I guess."
"I get that."
Bosch got back into the Jeep and considered the trek home.
at least 40 minutes in Sunday night traffic, and felt so besieged and tired that he knew he could not make it. He thought about how easily Elizabeth had fallen asleep with her head against the glass. He reached down to the seat's side lever and popped the backrest to its farthest recline angle. He closed his eyes and was soon dead to the world in a deep sleep. 8 hours later, the unfiltered light of dawn snuck in under Bosch's eyelids and woke him. He looked around and saw that there was only one motorcycle parked next to the Jeep. The others had somehow left in the night without their pipes penetrating his sleep. It was a testament to his exhaustion. The one remaining bike had a black fuel tank with orange flames painted on it. Bosch recognized a match to the paint job of the cane Sisko had lent him. It told him that Sisko was still on duty. After getting his bearings, Bosch unlocked the glove compartment and checked to make sure his gun and badge were still there. Nothing had been taken. He relocked the compartment, climbed out of the Jeep, and went inside. He saw no one in the front room and proceeded down the hallway toward the rear of the structure. He found Sisko sitting on a cot that had been set up across the door to the room where Bosch had left Elizabeth Clayton almost 8 hours before. Next to the cot there was a short stool, used for sitting on while working on a motorcycle engine. "You're back." "Technically, I never left." "How is she?" "It was a good night, no bumps. She's been awake now for about an hour and is starting to hit the wall, so you could go in the room and talk to her before she starts chewing her fingernails off." "Right." Sisko got up to move the cot out of the way. "Take the stool. Be on her level when you talk." Bosch grabbed the stool, turned the lock on the door, and entered the room. Elizabeth was in a sitting position on her cot, leaning back against the wall, arms folded in front of her chest, showing the early stages of need. She leaned forward when she saw Bosch enter.
"You,"
she said.
"I thought that was you last night."
"Yeah, me," he said. He put the stool down 4 feet from the cot and sat down. "Elizabeth, my name's Harry. My real name, that is."
"What the fuck is this? Am I in jail again? Are you a narc?"
"No, you're not in jail, and I'm not a narc. But you can't leave yet."
"What are you talking about? I need to go."
She made a move to get up, but Boss shot up off the stool and put his hands out, ready to push her back down on the cot. She stopped.
"What are you doing to me?"
"I'm trying to help you. You remember what you said to me when I got on the plane the first time? You said, 'Welcome to hell.' Well, all of that is gone now. The Russians, the camp down there, the planes, everything, all shut down. The Russians are dead." "But you're still in hell, Elizabeth."
"I really need to go now."
"Where?" "Chemical Ali's gone. He was shut down last night. There's nowhere to go. But we can help you here."
"What do you have? I need it."
"No, not like that. I mean really help you. Get you off this addiction and out of this life." She shrieked with laughter, a short staccato burst.
"You think you can save me? You think you're the only one who's ever tried? Forget it. Fuck you. I can't be saved. I told you before. I don't want to be saved."
"I think you do. Deep down, everybody does."
"No. Please. Just let me go."
"I know it's going to be rough. A week in this room, it will probably feel like a year. I'm not going to lie to you about anything." Elizabeth raised her hands to her face and started crying. Bosch couldn't tell whether it was a last-ditch effort to use his sympathy to get out of the room, or whether the tears were truly for herself and what she knew lay ahead. Bosch didn't want her to leave the room, but he needed to get her to acknowledge and approve of what was happening. "There's a guy sitting outside the door who was here for you. His name's Sisko. He's been where you are."
"Please. I can't."
"Yes, you can. But you gotta want it. Deep down, you have to know that you are in the abyss and that you want to climb out."
"No,"
she moaned. Bosch now knew the tears were real. Between her fingers, he could see true fear in her eyes. "Has any doctor ever put you on Suboxone? It helps. You still carry the weight of withdrawal, but it helps." She shook her head and was back to holding her arms tightly across her chest. "It will help you, but you have to gut it out, and you've got to want to."
"I'm telling you, nothing works. I can't be saved."
"Look, I know you lost somebody, You got it written on your skin. I know it can drive you down into a hole. But think of Daisy. Is this the end she would want for you? Elizabeth didn't answer. She brought a hand up to cover her eyes again while she cried. Of course it's not, Bosch said. It's not what she would want.
Please, Elizabeth said. I want to go now.
Elizabeth, just tell me you want this to end. Give me the nod and we'll get through it.
I don't even know you, she screamed.
You're right, Bosch said, his voice remaining calm. But I know there is something better than this for you. Tell me you want it. For Daisy.
I want to go.
There's nowhere to go. This is it.
Fuck.
Stay here, Elizabeth. Say you want to try. She stopped hiding behind her hand and dropped it lifelessly into her lap. She looked away from him to her right. Come on, Bosch said. For Daisy. It's time. Clayton closed her eyes and held them closed as she spoke.
Okay, she said. I'll try.
Chapter 34. Bosch got to his breakfast meeting 15 minutes late. Holler was in a booth near the back of the restaurant. Bosch slid in across from him, wondering if he could stomach any food. He decided not.
You're late and you look like shit, Holler said.
Thanks, Bosch said. Let's just say the past 72 hours haven't been the best of my life.
Then good news, my brother. We're here to plot your rise from the ashes.
Sounds good to me.
You know, a lot has happened in the past 72 hours. I wish I had Cisco here to talk about his end of it, but he seems to be off the grid.
You can't fill me in?
Of course I can. The main thing is, we have a strong lineup for testimony for Wednesday. As long as we can get our foot in the door, that'll be the key. The DA and Cronin are going to argue like hell to exclude us from the hearing, but I think we have a strong argument for standing. So I need you to practice your outrage.
I don't need to practice it. And Borders will be there?
The judge issued a transfer order. He's probably coming down in a van as we sit here.
Yeah, well, if he's there, and that close to freedom, then I'll have all the outrage you need. Holler nodded. That's what he wanted to hear.
Now, as upsetting as that article in the Times was, it's going to work in our favor, the lawyer said, because that kicks this thing out into the open, and the state's not going to be able to argue that your professional reputation hasn't taken a big hit. It's clear as day, right there in black and white.
Good, Bosch said. I'm glad that's backfiring on that asshole Kennedy.
Right. Now we have to be ready for all eventualities. After I make my argument, the judge might want to question you back in chambers. The story yesterday guarantees full media coverage of this, so the judge may want to take you back and hear your side of it before he puts it out in front of the media. You have a problem with that?
No, none. The waitress came to the table, and Bosch ordered coffee. Holler ordered a short stack of pancakes, and the waitress left them alone.
You don't want to eat? Holler asked.
No, not now, Bosch said. So what about Spencer, the counter guy? Where's that gone since I've been out of the loop?
We put a solid buzz in his ear last night.
What's that mean?
I had him hit with a subpoena. It freaked him the fuck out because he didn't know we were on to where they were hiding his ass.
Okay, back up. I've been out of the loop since Thursday, you remember? Last I heard, Cisco was on him and saw him meet with Cronin's wife in the bookstore parking lot. What happened after that?
The next morning, I put Cisco back on him. Cronin and Cronin obviously suspected you were up to something and not going to take this lying down. So they tried to stash Spencer till after the hearing so we couldn't have him. But fuck that. Cisco and his guys already had him and followed him to the stash house they set up down in Laguna. It was their own weekend house. You should have seen the look on Spencer's face when he got the subpoena.
You were there?
No. That would have been against the rules, me delivering the subpoena. But I've got the next best thing to being there. Holler pulled out his phone and continued as he set up the playback of a video.
I issued a subpoena and faxed it to a PI I know down in OC, Lauren Sachs, ex-Orange County Sheriff and a real looker. People call her Sexy Saxy. She does a lot of matrimonial work now. You know, going into bars to see if the husband's got the wandering eye, that sort of thing. She's got these glasses with the hidden camera she wears on those jobs, and I told her I wanted a video record of service on this thing. This is what she got. Holler turned his phone so Bosch could see it. Harry leaned across the table so he could pick up the audio. On the screen was a door. It was shot through the point of view of Sack's video glasses. Bosch saw her arm reach out as she knocked on the door. There was a silence, but then a shadow could be seen through an ornamental stained glass square set in the center of the door. Someone was standing silently on the other side. "Mr. Spencer," Sack said, "I need you to open the door, please." Her stern tone was met with a long silence. "Mr. Spencer, I can see you," Sack said. "Please open the door." "Who are you?" said a voice. "What do you want?" "I have legal documents for you to sign from Los Angeles." "I don't know what you're talking about." "Your law firm is Cronin and Cronin, right? Then these are for you." No response. Then a lock could be heard turning, and the door opened 3 inches. A man looked out with one eye. But enough of his face appeared in the opening for Bosch and anyone else to confirm it was Spencer. Sachs quickly shoved a folded white document through the door. Spencer tried to close it, but unseen in the video, Sachs had put her foot over the threshold. The document got through, and Spencer let it fall to the floor in the hallway behind him. "This is a subpoena demanding your appearance in court this coming Wednesday morning," Sachs said. "It is all clear in the document you have been served with. If you do not appear, you will be subject to warrant and arrest by the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. I'd be there if I were you." Spencer's eyes widened as he realized that his worst nightmare was about to unfold. When he spoke, he stuttered, I'm not Terry Spencer." "Well, sir, I never use the name Terry here, and the subpoena says Terrence. If I were you, I would not even try that tack to avoid appearance in court. You have been duly and legally served, sir. I have documented service. To not show up or to claim you have not been served will only anger a superior court judge and probably your employer, the Los Angeles Police Department." Sachs removed her foot and Spencer closed the door. His shadow remained behind the stained glass panel. Sachs held at the door for a moment, then reached out and knocked again, this time employing a gentle, almost sympathetic tap. "A piece of advice, Mr. Spencer? Come with a lawyer. And you should know that using Kathy Cronin would be a conflict of interest. Her firm represents the interest of Preston Borders, not yours. Have a good day, sir." The POV of the video swung 180 degrees as Sachs turned and walked down a stone pathway to a waiting car. The location was clearly the hills of Laguna, and Bosch could see the cobalt blue ocean over the roofline of the house across the street. The video ended, and Holler took his phone back. He looked at Bosch with a smile. "Pretty neat, huh?" he said. "I think we teed up, Mr. Spencer, pretty good." "What do you think he'll do?" "I'm hoping he shows up. I told her to say that part about angering the judge and his employer. Maybe that will make him show." "Did you tell her to suggest he bring a lawyer? A lawyer might tell him to take the Fifth." "Maybe, but I thought it was worth the risk. We need him to cut the Cronins loose. The hope is he won't let them know what's going on." "I get that, but if he takes the Fifth, we'll never know how he played the evidence and got into that box." "Some secrets you live with if you win your case. Know what I mean?"
"I guess. What else have we got?"
"Well, that's where I need you, Broheim. Cisco is at large. I hope he hasn't slipped up. And I need an investigator. I want to locate, just so you know, Cisco's been working for me since yesterday afternoon, not on this, on a personal matter." Holler laughed, thinking it was a joke. "I'm serious," Bosch said.
"A personal matter," Holler said. "What personal matter?"
"He's helping a friend of mine, and it's confidential. It's got nothing to do with this."
"It has everything to do with this if I don't have my investigator. What the fuck is going on?"
"Look, it was an emergency and I needed him. He'll be clear later on, and I'll be able to tell you all about it then. But you've got me. You said you want to locate something or somebody? What? Who?" Holler stared at him for a long moment before answering. It's a who, he finally said. I pulled the court file on the original trial and have been reading the transcription. I want to locate Dina Schuyler. Bosch didn't need long to place the name. Dina was Danielle Schuyler's younger sister. She was the one who had been scheduled to visit Danielle through the holidays. The visit never happened, but Dina did come out from Hollywood, Florida, during the trial to testify about the plans the sisters had for living together and taking Hollywood, California, by storm. Dina was 18 months younger, and Danielle had been protective of her. While testifying, she spoke of their loving the movie White Christmas, because it was a show business story about two sisters. She told the jury that every holiday season, they would put on a rendition of the song Sisters for their parents. Dina was a powerful witness during the penalty stage of the trial. Bosch had always felt that her hour of tearful testimony was what swayed both the jury and the judge toward the death penalty. I'm thinking we might need her for the emotional pull, Holler said. I want the judge to know the family still cares that the victim's sister is right there in the courtroom and he'd better get this thing right. She was a strong presence at the trial. Did she ever move out here, like she and her sister had planned?
Yeah, she did. I stayed in touch with her at the beginning and then it kind of tapered off. I think I was a reminder of what had happened to Danny. I got the message and stopped checking on her.
Danny?
Danielle. People who know her called her Danny.
If you're not allowed to testify Wednesday, and I will go apeshit crazy if you're not, make sure you call her that.
Bosch didn't respond. These kind of subtle manipulations were part of Holler's daily life, but they always bothered Bosch, even if they were done in his favor. He felt that if he didn't condone them from attorneys working against him, he shouldn't accept them from one working for him. Holler moved on.
So did she make it? He asked. I looked her up on IMDb and there was nothing. Did she change her name or something?
I didn't really track that. I don't know whether she stayed in the business.
Do you think you can find her?
If she's alive, I'll find her. But if she's not in L.A., I don't know about getting her here by Wednesday morning.
Right. Just see what you can do. Maybe we get lucky.
Maybe.
What else?
For you, that's it. I'm going to work here this morning and figure out a case path.
What's that?
The one thing we can count on is that our request to intervene on the motion to vacate will draw heavy fire from both the DA and Borders. I'll make an argument and I'll offer a proffer to the judge, sort of an unofficial look at what we'll present if granted standing. I'll run down our witness list and say what each of them is willing to testify to. If we convince the judge, then we're in. And then we kick their asses.
Got it. Do you mind if I split?
I gotta go in for some follow-up stuff this morning, and I want to go to work on finding Dina.
No problem, Harry. Go get him.
But between now and Wednesday, get some sleep. I don't want you coming into that courtroom looking like you're guilty. Taking a last gulp of coffee, Bosch pointed a finger at Holler like a gun, and then slid out of the booth. Holler spoke again before he could walk away.
Hey, Harry, one last thing.
You are a damn fine detective, brother. But I want my man Cisco back.
Right. I'll tell him.
Chapter 35 Bosch saw a TV truck from one of the Spanish language stations parked in front of the SFPD headquarters when he drove in. He assumed it was there because of the Farmacia murders, but he didn't think that what had happened over the weekend could be contained for very long, and the Spanish-language media was often ahead of the game when it came to the news in San Fernando. Before going to his office in the jail across the street, Bosch went in the side door of the station to get more coffee and check on things in the detective bureau. It was a full house this time, with all three detectives in their work pods, and even Captain Trevino visible behind his desk through the open door of his office. Only Bella Lourdes looked up at Bosch's entrance, and she immediately signaled him over to her cubicle. He held up a finger, telling her to hold a moment. He returned to the nearby coffee station and quickly poured his second jolt of the day into a cup. He then worked his way around the three-desk module to get Bella's spot in the back.
Morning, Harry.
Morning, Bella. What's up?
She pointed to her computer screen, where a video was playing. It was obviously taken from a helicopter and shot downward at a water recovery of a body. Two divers were wrestling with